Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Honorable Dango.
You want a photocopy of my passport, I believe.
Good morning.
No, you didn't send me. I'm still waiting.
Okay.
Let me take this opportunity to formally open our meeting by extending a word of greetings to all our honorable members.
Recording in progress.
On the platform, and also a special word of welcome and greetings to our visitors. I suspect the DM will be with us, and the team that she will be leading, but also the team from Parliament, the Prince Richard and the researcher and the communication team and the administrator. Welcome. Today we are hosting the Department of Public Administration, mainly around an update in terms of the work that they are doing around single public service administration. We have seen the presentation from the department, and without any sort of time, let me give over to the committee secretary to present apologies to us.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, colleagues. The apologies that we have received are as follows. It's apology from Honorable Mama Rakhane. She is traveling to Cape Town this morning. She might not join the meeting. Honorable Khaya and Honorable Protothes, they're in Gauteng. They're attending an ad hoc committee on disasters meeting. Honorable Aplene is on leave and doing party work. Organizational work, actually, yeah.
Thank you. And also the apology from the minister received it.
Yes, also we've received the apology from the minister, Chair. And also the standing apology of Honorable Lansman. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Committee Chair, for presenting those apologies. Let's note and accept those apologies. And I understand that the delegation will be the Deputy Minister, Dr. Chanapilani Machake, the DG, Ms. Yoli Swamakasi, and I do from the Legal Services, and then also Mr. Mapunda, the DD. Which is responsible for human resource management, and also the director of management, Ms. Marco. So that is the delegation that we have. Once we are done with the presentation, we'll then invite members to engage the presentation. And without any waste of time, may I invite the Deputy Minister for opening remarks. Do we have the DM already?
The DM is here. Chairperson, good morning to you. Good morning to members of the Select Committee. It's a pleasure for us to actually come before you this morning, and I just want to greet the public in general. Including officials from the department. Today, can I switch off my mic and chair, because where I am, reception is poor.
Yes, you can see the video DM.
Chair, I think she really did switch off her mic. And she meant video.
Okay, I'm back now.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Today we're going to be presenting to the Select Committee a briefing in relation to the enforcement of the implementation of public service regulations across the public service, to ensure uniformity and standardization of government administrative business processes as requested by the committee. I think it's befitting for the committee to actually request a briefing of this nature, because public service regulations are very important in terms of delivery of services to the people of South Africa in a way that the people actually expect government to deliver services to make a difference and change in their lives. Also, what is important, Chair, in terms of what we've actually been requested to come and present this morning is the fact that for now, the Department of Public Service and Administration is only responsible for national government departments and provinces. We are not yet in the local government sphere. Even if there is a bill that is actually still being worked on, that may actually lead us to a situation where we may be in the position to have one public service in the future. The bill is the Public Administrative and Management Bill that is actually being looked at. And in its conceptualization, single public service or public administration is envisaged as a critical and strategic intervention of government to further enhance and strengthen the capability of the systems of government across the three spheres to deliver the state's developmental agenda for enhanced service delivery and better integration of efforts. The single public administration will be based on fundamental premise that institutions across the three spheres of government comprise the machinery of the state and have to be strategically aligned and harmonized to complement one another so as to more effectively fulfill the needs of the citizens of the country. What is important is to actually also understand what this implies and be alert even also to challenges that we might actually experience once we have reached the stage, which means we shouldn't actually just blindly enter into this process without making proper assessment and analysis to the extent that it will actually fully inform us as to how this will actually manage to work out without too many challenges. We are also alert to the fact that we need to make an audit of the or a review of public service regulations to the extent that public service regulations shouldn't become a debilitating factor for service delivery towards providing what South Africans need. It should become a vehicle that actually makes it possible for whatever government has got to offer to the people of South Africa to be possible. This process has already started from within the Department of Public Service and Administration. We are alert to the fact that we need to actually also embark on a consultation process so that it shouldn't be a process that's almost like a desktop research that would actually think it will give answers without actually interacting with the very people that this is affecting. We're hoping in future we will be in the position to actually give you a report of this nature that will be part of the instruments and tools that we as the Department of Public Service and Administration want to continue using to perfect public service for the people of South Africa. Chair, may I take the opportunity to handing over to the DG in order for the Director General to make a presentation on this that you have actually called us here for. I thank you.
Thank you, DM, the DG, for this last.
on those who are claiming on the various grants.
Chair, if the DG is not available for now, because I thought she was going to be joining us, may I ask? I think DG is here on the platform. DG, can you hear me?
Apologies, DM and Chair. This is the Chief Director in the Office of the DG. The DG has requested that the Head of Legal Services take us over through the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's allow the Head of the Legal Services to present.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members of the committee. Thank you, DM, for the introduction. I think that gives us a sense of what the presentation is going to deal with. Chair, I'm going
to start with your video. With your video first, because this is streaming, so that at least the public is able to relate with the person behind the voice.
Yeah, I'm going to try and do that now. Good morning, Chair. Can you see me now?
Yes, we can see you now.
Hi. Good morning. My name is Thank you. My name is Renisha Naidu. I'm the Chief Director of Legal Services for the Department of Public Service and Administration. I will be taking the committee through the presentation that we've prepared at the request of the committee. Chair, if you don't mind, I would request that I switch my camera off so that I can share a screen to allow for the presentation. Otherwise, you're going to get network issues.
No problem. We can do that.
Thank you. I'm going to share my screen now. Chair, you'll just confirm that you can see my screen.
Yes, we can indeed see the presentation.
Thank you very much. Chair and committee members, we were asked to present on a topic called the enforcement of the implementation of the public service regulations across the public service to ensure uniformity and standardization of government administrative business processes. We have done a presentation to address these issues. The outline of the presentation is firstly to unpack what was requested by the committee so that we all are at idem with what we are talking about, and then to give a broad overview of the Single Public Administration Initiative, what we have done thus far, what was intended, and what we've achieved. Then to talk about the Act itself that gave effect to that Single Public Administration Initiative to some degree, as well as other reforms and some envisaged timelines for the committee to note as they interact with these processes. Chair, at the when we received this request from the committee, we then had to seek clarity from the secretariat of the committee to make sure that when we respond to the request from the committee, that we respond as the committee had envisaged. So following our request for clarity on what the topic was about, we received an email that clarified that the committee was of the view that there were challenges that were identified in previous years, which talked to the lack of integration and coordination across government, the dissimilar experience of government services, as well as the different conditions of service that exist between the public service and local government, as well as entities. So taking into account the further clarification that was requested and obtained, we have then done this presentation to within the context of the Single Public Administration Initiative, which was precisely that initiative which sought to address those challenges that the committee was raising. So it is in that context that this presentation is being done. Chair, when we started the public service, the Single Public Administration Initiative, one of the questions that we had to ask was, why did we need it and what was it going to achieve? One of the biggest concerns around a single public administration process is that by the constitutional processes that we must recognize that the spheres of government are distinctive, they are independent, they are interrelated. And in that context, as we develop legislation or as we try to improve the state capacity and capability that we are required to do in terms of the National Development Plan, we must recognize that, that distinctiveness of the spheres of government. As we started the single public administration, one of the or some of the issues that we sought to address was simply to improve state capacity by ensuring that people have the requisite know-how and attributes and skills and abilities to do the job that they are employed to do. The second element of improved state capacity is to ensure that we have a professionalized public service. And this is a critical milestone in building a capable, ethical, and developmental state. The second target that we sought to achieve through a single public administration was to improve state capability. This basically talks to improving and enabling the state to perform its functions at a very macro level. So we're not talking about administrative matters that are dealt with on a daily basis. We're talking about macro enablers such as systems, structures, processes, governance arrangements and instruments, technologies and innovation, everything that helps the state drive its machinery. The objective and the specific objectives of the single public administration chair as it was conceived was to provide a platform for the achievement of a single and integrated public administration system that was strengthened by legislative governance and proper frameworks. We also had to ensure that institutions across all three spheres of government, which is the machinery of the state, and that is your public service, which is your national and local government, sorry, your national and provincial government, as well as your local government, are strategically aligned and harmonized to complement each other so that they effectively fulfill the needs of citizens of the country. We also had to ensure that there was a single and integrated public administration that anchors the implementation and sustenance of the district coordinated service delivery model. We further had to reinforce the critical role of government in building a capable and developmental state. And the model seeks to strengthen principles of cooperative governance and intergovernmental relations. So it basically seeks to bring government together in terms of delivering services organizing itself in a manner to deliver proper services. Chair, in the context of the single public administration, we also then, when we envisaged the single public administration initially, it was conceived that there will be one piece of legislation that will cut across the whole of the state to manage the organization and the management, general management, as well as the functioning and personnel related matters in all three spheres of government. So when we started the Public Administration Management Bill at the time in 2002, the intention was then to replace the Public Service Act in its entirety, as well as to replace sections of the Municipal Systems Act. But as the chair and committee members would note from reading off the Public Administration Management Act, as we see that was passed in 2014, it did not repeal the Public Service Act and it did not repeal the Municipal Systems Act. So we have an act currently that deals with matters that are not regulated either by the Public Service Act or the Municipal Systems Act. So as we take this process forward to looking at how then do we get to a point where we are achieving the single public administration principles, but not through one single act. The approach that we've taken to get this better coordination is to retain the Municipal Systems Act as well as the Public Service Act, but to allow the PAMA to manage those matters that are not regulated by those acts, but which require systems that will traverse both the public service as well as municipalities, to ensure that there's better coordination in those particular areas. In areas that are regulated by the Municipal Systems Act and the Public Service Act, as I will present later, we will find mechanisms within which those two pieces of legislation can be better aligned to ensure that single public administration is achieved. So, Chair, in a nutshell, the approach that we've taken is to retain the current acts, is to amend the Public Administration Management Act to the extent that those provisions that prove to be problematic to implement as it stands are amended, but it's also to introduce new provisions in the public administration that will cross across all government institutions, including to some degree public entities, where this act will provide mechanisms to remove unjustifiable disparities in conditions of service across the spheres of government. It is also an act, as we amend, to find processes that will define proper coordinated mandating processes when it comes to collective bargaining, etc. We are also then, as we retain the Public Service Act and the Public Administration Act, as well as the Municipal Systems Act, there is going to have to be measures that we take into account as we develop norms and standards that affect the public administration so that there's better coordination between those pieces of legislation. And that will require collaboration between the Department of Public Service and Administration, as well as the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Chair, just to give a sense of where we started with the single public administration in a diagram. In 2002, this process was conceived. In 2014, in 2008, a bill was drafted. As I said, it was quite an extensive bill. During the 2014 process, between 2008 and 2014, the legislative process, the bill was reduced to 20 sections. It did not, as I said, repeal the existing pieces of legislation, but it does support those pieces of legislation. Since then, since 2014 to 2021, there has been extensive work that's been done, both in terms of operationalizing PAMA, as well as in terms of drafting regulations and drafting amendments to ensure that we are able to implement what we have. So, Chair, just in a nutshell, the Public Administration Management Act that was passed in 2014 achieved some of the fundamental aspirations of the single public administration. It was the first step towards this process. The Act as it stands allows for across-the-board coordination in certain areas across the public administration, where it enables mobility of staff between the spheres of government. So it provides for transfers and secondments across. It provides for measures around systems and mechanisms for service delivery. It talks to a shared vision and common culture as encapsulated in Section 195 of the Constitution. It also talks to common norms and standards for services. So when we talk about service centers, et cetera, the PAMA currently allows for norms and standards in those areas. There's also provisions that deal with training and capacitating public servants as well as employees in municipalities. There's issues and there's provisions to deal with IT systems, ICT generally, in terms of security, interoperability, maximizing its economies of scale, and also eliminating the astronomical costs that are incurred when we develop systems that are fragmented. So in a nutshell, the PAMA has done this in 2014. Since 2014, we have brought into operation 13 sections of PAMA, and that was brought into operation in 2019. There are 7 sections of PAMA that we have not been able to operationalize for various reasons. The main one being that there are certain provisions in the Act that are too costly or too overburdened to bring into operation. And those require then amendment to the Public Administration Management Act to deal with those areas that for practical purposes can't be implemented. And I'll explain as we move. There are other provisions that require regulations for its proper implementation, and those regulations, the process to develop those regulations started way back when the Act was promulgated in 2014. Since 2014, we have established within the DPSA an Ethics, Integrity, Disciplinary and Technical Assistance Unit, as well as the Office of Standards and Compliance, that was established through the Public Administration Management Act. And so we have given effect to those provisions. The TAO, which is the Ethics, Integrity, Discipline, Technical Assistance Unit, is primarily focused on strengthening the state's ability to eradicate corruption, eliminate unethical behavior and practices. The main objective of the TAO was to ensure that the public administration is insulated from unethical public servants and corrupt activities. The work that is done by TAO includes the management of ethics, as well as dealing with financial disclosures of employees. And as you would have seen in recent workshops, recent newspaper articles, etc., the TAO is involved in dealing with lifestyle audits across the public administration, developing systems to do those lifestyle audits, as well as creating mechanisms to ensure that conflicts of interest and unethical behavior is eradicated from the state. So that is the work of the TAO that is currently underway. The Office of Standards, which was also established in terms of this Act, is responsible for promoting compliance by institutions with public administration norms and standards. So both these units have a span of reach across the administration. So they deal with both national government, provincial government, as well as municipalities. The Office of Standards is primarily to deal with systems that will encourage compliance with norms and standards, to ensure that when the Auditor General does their audit, there has been some work done behind the scenes to ensure that institutions start to comply and the culture of compliance must change. So that is primarily then the focus of the Office of Standards and Compliance. Chair, in terms of the regulations, there have been 2 sets of regulations that have been developed since 2014. The first set is to deal with the TAO, and the second set is to deal with the Office of Standards and Compliance. The regulations primarily give powers to the TAO unit and create a framework within which lifestyle audits and ethics and integrity will be managed, and the Office of Standards and Compliance similarly deal with the powers of the office in terms of how they will then inculcate compliance throughout the administration. Chair, in 2019, the DPSA also then embarked on the process to amend the Public Administration Management Act, which was to deal with the issues where there required to be amendments where provisions were difficult to implement, as I said. But also, as we embark on this process, the amendments that we are seeking to do seek to further entrench the public administration, the single public administration initiative, so that we can remove unfair disparities where they exist in the public administration. So that's one of the fundamental provisions that are coming in through the Public Administration Management Amendment Bill. In a nutshell, I've summarized what the amendment bill will do. It's going to strengthen the provisions for transfers and secondments of employees across the spheres of government. We note that conditions of service and salaries, et cetera, are quite different in the different spheres of government, especially between the public service and municipalities. So there is work that's being done to make sure that employees are not unfairly disadvantaged when these transfers and secondments are done. There's also a need in these amendments to clarify provisions around the prohibition that exists where employees conduct business with the state. There have been some unintended consequences that are being managed through this process. It's also then to provide for the fundamental change to the structure of the National School of Government in terms of the Public Administration Management Act. As it stands, the School of Government must be created as an education of higher learning. And that has proved to be one of the areas where it's been difficult to implement that for various reasons. And then to provide, again, as I said, coordinated mandating processes, as well as processes to remove unfair disparities across the administration. Chair, just in terms of other reforms that the DPSA is busy with, and I think it's something for the committee to note, as we talk about reviewing regulations and making things easier, I think the DM has touched on these issues. The DPSA is also amending the Public Service Act, and the amendments to the Public Service Act are to include at this point, and it's still subject to consultations, the devolution of administrative powers to executive authorities to make decisions from executive authorities to heads of department. It's envisaged that those processes will allow easier decision-making and it will create efficiencies in the system. And then to augment the role of the DG in the presidency to support the president, as well as to deal with matters that arose out of constitutional court judgments in terms of overpayments and recovery thereof. It's also to clarify the role of the Public Service Commission in terms of grievances and the role of the president and the premier in terms of the appointment and career incidents of HOD. So that's, in a summary, what the Public Service Act amendment is seeking to deal with. In addition to amendments to the Public Administration Management Act and the Public Service Act, the DPSA is also in the process of reviewing the Public Service Regulations of 2016. As the committee might be aware, there has been an outcry about the, and I think DM has mentioned it, there's been an outcry about the amount of red tape that exists across government and the amount of the overburdening of regulations in the system. So the DPSA has started a process to review those regulations, and a gap analysis has been concluded to identify the areas that will assist in eliminating the unnecessary red tape and creating those efficiencies which we see. Chair, as we go through these processes and bearing in mind the Single Public Administration Initiative. There is also a process to ensure that as we amend what exists in the public service, we don't create huge disparities between the public service and municipalities. So we're looking to align better with provisions across the spheres of government as we do these reforms. In terms of the alignment across spheres, and I think this is more on an administrative level and how we will manage these between the two departments, the DPSA and the Department of Cooperative Governance. As we are aware, the Minister for Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs is responsible for legislation that affects local government. And the Minister for Public Service and Administration is responsible for the Public Service Act, which deals with national and provincial departments. To some degree, the Public Administration Management Act, which is administered by the Minister for Public Service and Administration, as well as the Minister for Cooperative Governance when it comes to the making of regulations. And that act covers the national, provincial, as well as municipal departments. So in that context, there is recognition that the Department of Cooperative Governance is one of the major stakeholders with the DPSA for the attainment of the Single Public Administration. And therefore, there is a need for both these departments to constantly consult each other and to ensure that the policies that individual ministers make supported by the individual departments are aligned as far as possible and streamlined, and that any unnecessary disparities are avoided going as we go forward towards the realization of the Single Public Administration. Chair, just to bring to the committee's notice, there's also processes within the Department of Cooperative Governance where we have been informed that it is also reviewing some of its legislation affecting local government. As we are aware, the Municipal Systems Act was just amended recently through Parliament and has been signed into law recently by the President. So there has been a recent amendment. And as we embark on our processes to review legislation that affects the public service as well as the public administration through the PAMA, we will then be consulting collaboratively with the Department of Cooperative Governance to ensure that we achieve those principles that are underpinned by the Single Public Administration Initiative. Chair, as the last slide, we've provided some timelines for the committee to note. As I have indicated, the DPSA has embarked on amendments to both the Public Administration Management Act as well as the Public Service Act. And both those amendment bills are in the process. They are currently in the NEDLAC process, but the timeline that we envisage for them to be submitted to Parliament is still in this financial year. So we are expecting to table it by the end of this year. So the committee will then, as part of those processes, have to engage on both those bills. In terms of the public administration management regulations, the two sets of regulations that I spoke to earlier, it is envisaged that the ones for the Office of Standards and Compliance will be brought into operation in the course of the 2022-2023 financial year. However, the regulations on the TAO will be brought into operation, and we are targeting the 1st of April 2023, but that is wholly dependent on institutional and system readiness. Those regulations deal with an electronic e-disclosure system for financial disclosures for both the public service as well as municipalities. But in order for us to bring that into operation and to have one system to do that, it requires other system changes. So we are hoping that those system changes will be done by 1 April 2023. If we meet that date of 1 April, then these regulations will then be operationalized across the administration. With that, thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. I don't know whether is there a challenge, Committee Secretary?
We can hear you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Is the presenter finished?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
great.
The presenter is finished.
Thank you, DM, for the presentation. What will then do?
Maybe before you continue, just to say that in terms of the presentation, slide number 11, we may have to withdraw one bullet point on slide number 11 because it's a matter that is in the professionalization of public service framework that is still being debated on. It's about devolution of administrative power from the executive to the authorities, what that means, because that interface between administration and executive is something that needs to be looked at carefully. So that first bullet point for the records of Parliament, can we just exclude it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DM, for that clarity. We will then, having had an opportunity to go through the presentation, invite honourable members to raise any point of clarity, point of engagement, any point that honourable members would want to converse with the department. The floor is open, honourable members. I've noted Honorable Boshoff, I've noted Honorable Mushuri. Let's start with Honorable Boshoff.
Chair, I trust that you can hear me. I'm a bit flu-y. Thank you very much for the presentation. It looks good on paper. I just hope that they will be able to stick to their implementation dates. Then I'd also like to ask a question regarding the public service administration officials that go from one job to the other within PSA. How are we going to have a look at this? Is there a flagging system in place to stop them using this revolving door policy? Going from one department to the other. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Basha. Honorable Mushuri.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to you and greetings to the DM and the officials. Let me also, Honorable Chair, thanks for the presentation. My first question, Honorable Chairperson, I just want to check, is the TAU and the Office of Standard and Offices extended to local government, Honorable Chairperson? That is my first question, Chair. The second one, Honorable Chairperson, the Draft Public Administration Management Bill is intended to replace the Public Service Act in its entirety, as well as the section of the Local Government Municipality System Act, 2000 Act number 32 of 2000. Then my question, Honorable Chairperson, I just want to check how far is the process when it is going to be brought before Parliament for consideration, Honorable Chairperson. Other question, Honorable Chairperson, the department says there are different pieces of legislation that must be retained and they are in the PAMA that have posed implementation challenges must be amended. My question, Honorable Chairperson, I just want to check which are those pieces of legislation that need to be retained and why, secondly, can you specifically state the area in PAMA that have been post implementation challenge and needing to be amended, Honorable Chairperson? The other one, Honorable Chairperson, looking at the slide number 4 of the presentation, is the National School of Government involved in the development of skills? If not, what could be the reason? And if yes, to what extent is the National School of Government linked in ensuring the development of skills across the sector and contributing to the creation of the single public administration, Honorable Chairperson? Secondly, Honorable Chairperson, I just want to check, is the Public Service Commissioner playing any role? If so, what is the role? Looking again, Honorable Chairperson, on slide number 9 of the presentation, speak to the role of the Technical Assistance Unit in ensuring discipline. So I just want to check, Honorable Chairperson, what are the achievements of the Technical Assistance Unit in controlling corruption? Can the department provide a statistics breakdown in terms of the nature of corruption? The last one, Honorable Chairperson, I just want to check what could be the reason and why the other legislation were not repealed, e.g. the Municipal Structures Act. Can you just inform the committee about that one? Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Sorry, not open my video. I'm still on sick leave. I've got flu, like Honorable Boshoff. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Shuri, Honorable Dango.
Chairperson, a very simple question. Who conducts lifestyle audits at which sphere of government? Is the staff within the department large enough to actually monitor this? Are the lifetime audits at local government done by local government overseers or of this particular project? And is the capacity to, in fact, undertake lifestyle audits in all three spheres of government? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Dango. One from my side, there's a slide that speaks to the secondment and transfer of staff across the spheres. The clarity that I want to pose, Chair, it relates to whether that secondment is it effective across all the three spheres, or that can only be done between national and provincial government. I'm raising this point, appreciating the imperatives of the politics behind the single public service. And more so the regulations. Is it also applicable to the Municipal Systems Act, to the local government sphere, given the fact, as you have correctly pointed out, there will be different regulations, different legislation that covers the local government sphere, specifically residing with COGTA, but appreciating the point that you raised earlier on around the interdependence, the interrelatedness of the three spheres, and also their distinctive nature. But I think what is critical is the ability to be able to strengthen and coordinate. So I just want to check whether at local government sphere, can one with certainty from the presentation say that to a larger degree has been achieved, or there are still work, there is still work that has to be done in terms of ensuring that that ability to second or transfer staff across all the three spheres has been achieved. Thank you. Over to you, DM. I think you'll decide how you approach, whether you'll give to your team, and then you will come at the tail end to wrap up, or you lead the the responses. Over to you, dear.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think let me hand over to the DG for the responses, and then I will wrap up afterwards once all the responses have been given. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DM.
Thank you, DM.
Oh. Thank you, DM. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Before I respond, I'm going to ask Renisha to just handle some of the technical issues. We also have other colleagues in the group, in the meeting, who I would suggest that if they want to also make comments to indicate so. And then I will just come after the colleagues, just before the Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chair. Renisha?
Thank you, DG.
Maybe before Renisha comes in, there's a question that I wanted to ask that I forgot to raise. The role that Public Service Administration is playing in terms of strengthening and coordinating the vetting of senior managers. It's a matter that resides with the state security agency, but I'm more interested in terms of the role that this technical unit will be playing to make it much more easier to avoid the deadlock that probably has been identified as an issue in terms of contribution to lifestyle audit, the curbing of corruption, because I believe there's a role that the department will have to play in terms of strengthening that aspect of vetting, which obviously resides with state security agency, but definitely coordination and also support. It's important. Thank you, Renisha. You can come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, DG, DM. I'm going to try some of the questions, but I think the ones on the tower, maybe someone else, DG, might be better placed. On the first question for Honorable Boshoff, I think the principle of employment is that people are allowed to apply for jobs across the administration. And if they are successful, then they are entitled to take those jobs. However, what we do within the public service space and the cities in municipalities as well, is that we create certain prohibitions. And we create it simply where it's justified to limit those rights of people moving across spheres of government. The one instance where there's a prohibition is where somebody has been dismissed for misconduct. There are certain number of years that are in the regulations, both at a municipal level as well as at a public service level, where you can't re-enter those environments after you've been dismissed for misconduct. As part of the bills as we are processing to Parliament, we are also considering provisions to prohibit public servants from entering into arrangements with or employment arrangements with service providers where those service providers have been given tenure and those employees have participated in those processes. So those are the kind of prohibitions we're looking at, but not necessarily to prohibit generally the movement of people across the spheres of government. On the next issue in terms of the approach that we've taken to retain some of the pieces of legislation, currently there's a lot of amendments and there's a lot of value that is contained in the Public Service Act as well as the Municipal Systems Act. So the intention of the process is not to undermine those pieces of legislation. Initially, when we started the Single Public Administration Initiative, the idea was that we will have one administration regulated by one piece of legislation. But through this process, we have realized that it is not necessary to have one piece of legislation to achieve a single public administration. What is required is for better coordination within government. So whilst you have matters regulated by different acts, it's important that as a government collective, there is collaboration, there is intergovernmental relations, and those are the matters we are leveraging on. So currently there is legislation in place. It just requires us to coordinate. And I use the example of the prohibition on employment. If people are prohibited from joining a municipality for 10 years, the same should apply in the public administration. And those processes don't require legislative or acts to be reenacted to do that. We can do that through the regulatory frameworks. So those are just matters that will be dealt with as we move through the processes. And we have already started those processes with the Department of Cooperative Governance to achieve those alignments, for those alignments to take place. In terms of the role of the National Council of Government, one of the key fundamentals of the Public Administration Management Act, which applies to both the public service as well as municipalities, is for the National School of Government to play a key role in the development and the training of employees throughout the administration. So in terms of PAMA as it stands, and as we propose that it continues to remain, is that the National School of Government will be the institution that will provide training across the spheres of government. It is also envisaged that the National School of Government will also extend its mandate to provide training and development to those public entities that require such training and development. The role of the Public Service Commission is also being retained to certain matters, and that basically is about grievances in the public service. But I think the committee must also note that the Public Service Commission is also processing a bill through the legislative processes that will then further enhance the powers of the commission and the role of the commission in the public administration. So I think that process will also then perhaps give more credence to what the Public Service Commission can do. I think I've answered the question about why we haven't repealed the PAMA. On the transfers and secondments across the spheres, the Public Administration Management Act that was passed in 2014 already has provisions in Section 5 and 6 to enable the transfer and secondment of employees across the spheres of government. So it allows a municipal employee to move to the public service. It allows a public service employee to move to municipalities. It also allows employees to move between municipalities, which is something we don't have currently. So that's already in the PAMA. The reason we haven't brought those provisions into operation is because one of the unintended consequences was the repeal of certain sections in the Public Service Act, which then will create a vacuum if we do that repeal. So that's part of the amendments that we are bringing to Parliament, back to Parliament, to say we need to fix that before we can bring this provision into operation. So that process will be explained through the legislative processes. Thank you, DG. I think I've answered the questions.
Thank you,
DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were questions from Honorable Dango about the lifestyle audits. And I think, Chair, what would probably be the best thing to do for us, maybe for the next meeting, is to do a specific briefing on lifestyle audits. We have a guideline that we have provided for departments on the review process. So firstly, we start with doing lifestyle review. And then once we pick up that there's something that requires attention, then it gets to the next level, which is the actual audit. Departments may bring in external auditors to support them, depending on severity of the issue, or as well as report to law enforcement for those areas that require law enforcement investigation. So there is a whole guideline in respect to this. Currently, the lifestyle audits, we are, as the department, implementing them in national and provincial government. The technical advisory unit, in terms of its mandate, has responsibility that stretches over to local government as well. However, the Honorable Member asked a question around the capacity. How the technical advisory unit is structured currently doesn't have capacity to engage local government. So there are engagements taking place between DPSA technical advisory unit, as well as SALGA and the Department of Local Government, to see how we can collaborate and ensure that the lifestyle audits are extended to local government institutions. We have a system of declaration of interest, which is an electronic system, which helps us to flag employees who require further attention in terms of the lifestyle audits approach, Chairperson. I think that I've answered the questions. Just to confirm from our part that we are operating at the national and provincial sphere at this stage. We have not rolled out to local government. We are in conversation with local government. There are regulations that are going to be issued on this matter. There's been endorsement by the relevant ministers in terms of regulations, and lifestyle audits is part of the prioritized areas for further rollout. Thank you, Chairperson. I think that Renisha has answered all the questions that have been raised in respect to this matter. I wanted to highlight, I think there's a comment that the DM made earlier on, and I wanted to highlight that also the issue of direct delegation of administrative powers to accounting officers is an issue that is benchmarked against PFMA, because on financial delegations, the PFMA is very clear in terms of delegations of financial responsibility to accounting officers. So the argument with the amendments of the Public Service Act is that there must be a direct delegation of administrative powers to accounting officers. And these administrative powers mainly center around HR-related matters, recruitment, and et cetera, to accounting officers. It is a matter that is also in the Public Service Act Amendment Bill, and we can't go into detail on the matter now until it comes back to Parliament formally through the bill processes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. The last one on the support to government departments in terms of coordination of the vetting of the senior managers?
Oh, sorry, Chair. What we do at the stage of recruitment, our regulations and what we ensure happens as DPSA, and we have AG who audits appointments, who samples appointments and audits that there's a compliance with the regulations. So we require that there must be personnel suitability checks. Part of personnel suitability checks includes security checking. I don't want to say vetting because I think vetting goes deeper, but security checking of an employee before they get appointed. So there would be your typical search with SARPS and the confirmation that the employee does not have a criminal record and et cetera. Then the SSA is expected to further do vetting on selected groups of employees like the DGs, et cetera. SSA has been struggling for years with backlogs. I think COVID made matters even worse, but I've seen their communication to at least my department that they seem to have to be involved in a serious drive to deal with their backlog. We've been receiving lots of correspondence about the vetting that they are doing and the fact that some of them, those who report to me, obviously they have to speak to me as the DG of the department. I've had two or three requests in that area. So it's just giving me hope that they've built their capacity and they're trying to move on the issue of vetting of senior employees in senior positions in government. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. I see Honorable Dango's hand. Is that a legacy hand, Honorable Dango? Honorable Mushodi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to check this question of slide number 9. I didn't hear the response on the issue, what are the achievements of the technical assistance unit in corruption? Can the department provide a statistical breakdown in terms of the nature of corruption, Honorable Chairperson? Maybe I missed, but I didn't hear the answer for that question. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mushodi. DG?
Thank you, Chair. We can provide in writing that information. I don't have the statistics with me directly, but I do also want to highlight the mandate of the technical advisory unit in that it really facilitates, it does not investigate corruption. Investigation of corruption remains the responsibility of law enforcement agencies. We don't have mandate over that particular issue, but we do lots of facilitation and coordination within the public service and focusing on discipline management issues as well. So we will provide a report on the work of the technical advisory unit and what some of their successes are broadly in relation to their mandate. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. I guess that was the last follow-up raised. Back to you, DM.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the officials have given all the answers. We're just hoping that as we move forward, we will be in the position to refine this process. But one thing that is important is to really manage to be alert to what is meant by delegated authority to officials as compared to the authority of the elected representatives. Somewhere along the line, it's as if there is a little bit of confusion on this. It has actually also emerged in the professionalization of public service framework that is before cabinet now, and the matter is continuing to be looked into. And this borders on the interface between the executive and the administration, which is an area that really needs to be looked at carefully in order for us to be in the position to harmonize processes within government. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DM, for the presentation as led by you. We are now in a much more better position to appreciate progress made with regard to harmonization of our public service across all the three spheres, the areas of success, areas of challenges, and also areas that has to be amended in terms of the Municipal Systems Act and also in terms of the Public Service Act, but also the issues around the work of the Office of Standards and Norms, the role that it plays in terms of ensuring that there is no discord across all the three spheres. We really appreciate the work that you are doing, but more than that, respecting the independence of the three spheres, but at the same time, appreciating the fact that they are interrelated, they are interdependent, and. But more than that, I think that the center is to ensure that there is no discord in terms of our public service administration across all the three spheres. We want to really, on behalf of the Senate Committee, express our gratitude to you and your team, and also the effort that you took in terms of giving feedback on the progress that the Select Committee wanted to hear And on that note, allow me to take this opportunity to thank you for your for your leadership in the in the work that you are doing. We will now allow the DM and the team to leave the meeting. Because in the absence of any other follow-up, I think you have done justice to the presentation as reflected by the responses. The next question that we will then deal with is just from the committee secretary. The next item on the agenda.
Thank you, Chair. We're leaving.
Thank you, DM.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's the mere adoption of the minutes.
The adoption of the minutes, okay. Yes. Can you take us through the minutes?
I just want to check.
Do we have the numbers? Yeah. Okay, we have five.
No? Yeah, no, if we have five, we do have the numbers, we can proceed.
It's usually, yes. Yeah, and that's then. Deal with the minutes of the 24th of August, the aspect on the provincial road maintenance grant and rural road asset management systems that was presented by the Department of Transport. The first part deals with the attendees. Then that's the apologies. Are we happy with that? Let's then go to those our guests from the Department of Transport. And then the opening remarks, then the apologies were presented. These are the issues that were raised. The presentation was led and the delegation was led by the Chief Financial Officer. And then those were the comments and deliberations made by honorable members. And from 4.1 to 4.7, and then those were the consideration. Any correction that members have identified? In the absence of any correction, can we then get a mover for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of what transpired in the last meeting of the 24th of August?
I so move, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Dango, for moving. Can you get a seconder? Can we get a seconder?
Chair, sorry. I will move that. I will second the proposal by Honorable Dango.
Thank you, Honorable Bashoff. We wish you a speedy recovery, yourself and Honorable Moshodi. we need your help. We need your good help so that we can continue doing the work of the committee. I suspect, is that cold weather of Northern Cape?
Because also I'm also attacked by the flu.
Is the weather of Northern Cape
the same last week? It is that Thursday and Friday and Sunday. It was extremely cold. But thank you, a lot of members.
Chairperson, before you close the meeting, Chair?
Yes, I just want to formally say that with the secondment by Honorable Bashoff, the minutes are duly adopted now.
Thank you.
Over to you, Committee Secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of our discussion about the meeting next week, I wanted to at least to inform members what we've agreed upon.
Yes, because of the cabinet lekhotla.
Yes,
we have agreed to not to have the meeting next week. What were we supposed to host? It was the Department of
Public Service. Public Works and Infrastructure.
Okay, so that there will be no meeting next week. And then a week after that?
A week after that, Chairperson, it's ministerial briefings, Tuesday and Wednesday.
No, it's fine then.
Okay.
Person, if I may read something, at one point or another, we may have to raise with transport and PRASA the fact that they're meeting with national government, provincial government, and local government. Local government is now putting out flyers that the train service from the Naledi line and that line will be online soon. They've not given any dates, but it's creating expectations, and those expectations may not be realized while people are still stripping cables and things like that. So when they in fact meet with local government, they should inform. I'm not saying that they shouldn't meet with local government, but they should actually, if they're communicate exact information and not raise unrealizable expectations.
Yes, I think we'll definitely do that. It means in one of our items on the program, we might have to get an update in terms of work that PRASA is doing in terms of the reopening of those lines. Let's agree that in our program for the fourth term, we'll try to slot that in. Then, having said that, honorable members, can I then take this opportunity to indeed formally also express a word of thanks to all of you, honorable members, for ensuring that this meeting becomes a success. We also want to appreciate the presence of the parliamentary support team from the committee secretary to the researcher, the PMG, and also the communication team. We really appreciate your work. And on that note, honorable members, the meeting is formally adjourned. Thank you.